I am Daryl, compulsive overeater. Hi, everybody. And spiritual experience, spiritual awakening. And I want to start out by saying that whatever it is, either spiritual experience or spiritual awakening, that the author of that is our higher power, and that, and I don't know about you, but I've recognized that in nature that there are no two things alike, and of course DNA proves there's certainly no two humans alike, and so I was told at a men's retreat that abstinence is a gift received, not achieved. And that and I believe that. I believed it when I heard it, and I still believe it. And that it's a gift. It's I did nothing to earn that gift. It was just a freely given a grace that that came from my higher power. And that but no, it means that no two gifts are alike. So no two abstinences are alike. But then again, no two recoveries are alike. Everybody has a totally unique story. We'll have things that are in common with everybody else because we do have a common weakness, and that's what brings us together. But you know, as we as all of this unfolds, that we find that our path was given to us alone, and we have to be true to that path that we're given. And so I would say that for me, I had both this spiritual experience and the spiritual awakening. And you know, to give you an idea that just the way the wording and the step goes, spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, that tells me right there that it's going to take some effort on my part to participate in this this process of a spiritual awakening. Because I have to work the steps, and the things that come about because of that are going to be gifts that come my way, that are unique to me, and they're part of the path that that God has and ended up giving me to follow. So when I to kind of go back to my step one, because that's where my spiritual experience was. That in step one, I had been a compulsive overeater for my whole life, starting when I was probably 4 or 5 years old. And by the time I was, I would say probably 9 or 10, that I was definitely a secret eater. I was sneaking food. And that continued until I was old enough to have my own money and drive, and then I was still doing it, hiding it from other people, but I was able to kind of broaden my attack on the food that I was out chasing, and I would drive across town just to get a certain thing from a certain place. And so that and as time went by, I had some good success in different food diet programs, and over the years. And sometimes I lost 40, 50, 60 pounds, but then I would gain it back. And so I was always overweight, even on the best of diets, until I came to the OptiFast thing, and I lost 156 pounds in 9 months. And I really thought that I had it made, that this was it, this was the answer. I finally had the power that it takes to overcome this disease. And as soon as they reintroduced food into the equation, I was off and running again, and I gained all that weight back. And I, over a period of about 5 or 6 years, I did that 3 times. And when and then finally, that didn't even work anymore. Now nothing worked. I was binging almost all the time, And that was it. And I was I got to the place of where I couldn't even wait to get behind closed doors. I started to eat in public the way that I ate behind closed doors. And talk about being embarrassed and humiliated by this disease. But it was almost like that once the disease had me hooked on the line, that it was just playing with me. That there was nothing that I could do. It's just continually reeling me in little by little, would give me a little bit of leeway and let me play around thinking I was free, and then reel me in a little bit more. And finally, it was reeling me in all the way. And when that happened, that's about the time that I came to my first OA meeting out of total desperation and hopelessness, without a doubt. And so I come to my first meeting, and I really liked the fellowship. I liked what you people were saying. I liked the relationship that many of you had established with food. That was kind of what I was looking for. But I also heard this term abstinence, and I figured I could never do that. I could never give up white flour, and I couldn't give up sugar. And so when but then I really, well, maybe I thought that maybe I can fake it. Maybe somehow I can fake it, and I can be part of this after all. And I really wanted to belong. And so what happened was that I went to my second meeting, which was a Thursday meeting. First was a Tuesday, second was Thursday. And the people there were just as nice as the people in my first meeting. And they were having the topic of the day was miracles. And the leader had everybody sharing a miracle story, and it was really bugging me. And when it came to be my turn, I told them so. I told them that I didn't believe in those miracles, that they were more like coincidences to me. And so the people, instead of telling me, well, if you don't like what we have here, why don't you go on down the road to Tops or Weight Watchers or whatever? And they didn't. They said, you know, if they said, they said, keep coming back and you'll see your own miracle. And so that was Thursday. On Saturday morning, my wife then, who had just gotten out, it was my first wife, had just gotten out of recovery from alcoholism. And she had been in almost 30 days, and she was sober, and for the first time in many, many years. And I was sober through AA and the Big Book and everything. And they had told her that if she got cravings for alcohol, that chocolate was a good way to stem the cravings. So she had baked these chocolate chip cookies on Saturday morning, and she comes in with a platter of them, and she says, "Do you want some of these?" And I said, "I don't eat those anymore." And it was just like a bucket of cold water right in my face. I didn't know I didn't need them anymore. I was shocked. She was shocked. And I never turned out a cookie until I, before. So, and here, and so I had made no effort. I had made no decision. I had done nothing. I had gone to two meetings, period. Didn't even own a Big Book. And all of a sudden, I have the obsession lifted. And as soon as that moment happened, I knew it. I knew that a miracle had just taken place. It was a personal miracle, and it's part of my uniqueness, of my recovery and the gift that God gave me. Only God and I know what a big gift that was, that only the two of us know to what extent I was captivated and in bondage to this disease. And so at that moment, that was a spiritual experience for me. It was sudden, and it was overwhelming. It was a person, the personality change is still coming. But it was a major change, and to have the obsession lifted after all of those years, all of those things that I had tried. And it wasn't like something, Oh boy, I hope it's lifted. No, I knew it. I knew it that whatever bond that the food had on me before it had did not have it anymore. And so I would rate that as the spiritual experience. That was my spiritual experience. But I knew, and the book even tells us a price had to be paid, and I knew that I had to participate in this thing. And the one of the big things is the literature and getting I got my copy of the big book, and people were telling me about what to look for in there, and to start reading it, that recovery was within those pages. And so there was a whole bunch of miracles that happened at the same time that were part of the spiritual experience. There were changes in me. One of them was that the chapter talked about the essentials, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. The open-mindedness was brand new to me. I was not an open-minded person, and all of a sudden I was. And so when people would come and they would make suggestions, I would take those suggestions, and I would follow them up. And I started getting into action with the different things that I'm learning, and it's all like a whole new world had opened up to me, and built in in one of the chapters talks about we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension. And that's as good a description as I can come by, because I was so excited by all of this new stuff that I'm learning. I'm surrounded by it. People are telling me stuff. People are giving me cassette tapes. This was a big part of my recovery, was cassette tapes. I was stuck on the freeway going to and from work every day, and I had a cassette player in my car. And so I go to my the Monday night meeting that turned out to be my home meeting at that time. It was over in Hacienda Heights. And so I would go to work, and then I would come by that meeting later in the evening after I was leaving work. I was coming back to my home in Covina, and I would stop by the meeting. And so I walked into that meeting. These people don't know me from Adam, and they give me this person comes up and gives me a set of tapes. And the tapes are from Judy Hollis, Hope for Compulsive Overeaters. It's a set of tapes. And so I start listening to those tapes, and I'm learning a whole lot from those tapes. She's a brilliant woman, and as a matter of fact, she, of course, she's on our program, and she doesn't make any secret about it. And I'm sure that's not a break in anonymity. But she was one of the first people that made that connection between recovery and compulsive eating and recovery from alcohol, because she was an alcoholic alcohol and drug counselor for one of the pioneers of let's just say secular recovery, not program recovery, but secular recovery. But she saw I guess the similarities of recovery from compulsive eating, because she was a compulsive eater. She wasn't an alcoholic. She was a compulsive eater, and so she saw that. And so she was. So she's in my first textbook when I had gone back to school and taken master's for my master's degree, when we were to having the classes on compulsive eating. Her book was what they chose to have as our textbook for that class. And so what a you know so what a blessing. So I get these set of tapes, and it's taking me from like 0 to maybe 60 miles an hour pretty darn fast. Then at the same time, somebody hands me a set of tapes from Bill B. Bill B was an OA guy over in the valley, in the San Fernando Valley. And Bill B was a very controversial guy. He wrote a couple of books. One I think was called Compulsive Overeater. Another one was I think it was Abstinence, and I think the third one was Maintenance, were these three books. And all these people are giving him a bad time for doing what making money, that like they accused him of making money off of the program, and he certainly wasn't doing that. And anyway, so I said his tapes were awesome. He's the one that took me to this through the steps the first time I was ever taken from this through the steps was on cassette tape by Bill B. And it was a retreat that he had given where he took people through the steps. And for the rest of his lifetime, that every month he would take one a weekend, and he would devote it to a step study where people would come over to his house and he would take them from step one all the way through on that weekend. And and the man did a lot of service for me that maybe I'll talk about in a later session. And but anyway, so I get these tapes, and then I'm struggling with so I'm good for steps one and two. I certainly had no problem declaring myself powerless, and I'm having no problem seeing that a higher power just saved me. And but then to turn my will and my life over to that higher power, that was a different ball game. And so I'm struggling with that. And somebody, not somebody, my ex-wife, who is now sober in AA, we had gone to church together. And as we're coming out, she runs across one of her AA buddies who was at church at the same time. She introduces me, and we talk a bit, and the guy says, "Here, come on, follow me." And so he takes me out to his car, and he has his hatchback, and he opens the back of it, and it's cassette tapes wall to wall. He says, "Take what you like, and when you're done with them, just give them to your wife, and she'll bring them back to me and give them to me." And so there was one about abandonment to divine providence was the name of this tape, and it was a reading of a book that was written 200 years ago, and it was about surrendering to a higher power. And that's what was the key to me being able to take my third step. So God was kind of directing this all along, and I ended up with a sponsor. I had, but I didn't go to get a sponsor right away, and so part of my spiritual awakening is me going through, as opposed to the spiritual experience. I've had the spiritual experience. Now these things I'm describing now are part of the spiritual awakening, and they're as a result of working the steps. And so I find myself being able to just take what comes my way. Recommended readings, the books that I had bought. So I had the books that I had bought were the OA for Today, the little white book. I had the big book. I had the brown book of OA, and I had the AA 12 and 12. In fact, is AA the OA 12 and 12 hadn't even been written yet. And so anyway, so those are that was the literature that I had. And every once in a while, some other stuff would come my way as far as literature, but most of it was through the cassette tapes. My sponsor, once I got a sponsor, after 3 months, one of the things there's so many things to bring about as part of the spiritual awakening. Part of that was let's just say my lack of judging other people, that I had a real knack for judging other people. And so when I came to program, I found that that this open-mindedness led me to a place of where I didn't do that. I wasn't being judgmental. I'd listen to people share. I would take advice from them and everything. So after 3 months, I'm really thinking that I'm on my way. And all of a sudden, I go to a meeting and I find myself being judgmental. And I recognize that as soon as it happened, that I was being judgmental of somebody that was sharing. And I said, this is new. This is not the new Daryl. This is not the Daryl that had this spiritual experience. And I was thinking about it, and I noticed it is getting worse, and I started getting scared about my abstinence. God's going to pull the rug out from under me. And there was a lady that was coming to our meetings at and Georgia, newer Georgia used to go to those meetings with me, and those and that lady had been in relapse for several months and been trying to get back to be an abstinent, and she couldn't do it. And she was telling us how if hang on to your abstinence no matter what. Well, she comes up to me after a meeting, and I have no idea what she saw, but she said, "Daryl, I think you're in danger of losing your abstinence," and it scared the hell out of me, because in the first place, that took a lot of courage for her to do that, to come up and just tell me that. It was like I would say the odds are, or maybe if a different Daryl would have said, "Mind your own business," or something like that. But no, she came up and she told me that, and it scared me. And I came home and I prayed about it. And the next morning, I woke up and interesting. I prayed about it. Please, God, don't take away these 4 months or 5 months, whatever it was at that time. And he basically said, "I never gave you 4 months. I gave you one day. And I'll give you another day if you really want it, if you really want it." And so I really wanted it. And so I knew that I woke up the next morning. I knew exactly what I had to do, that I had to get a sponsor, and I had to commit to working all the steps, including the fourth step, which I was frightened about having to work that. And now I knew that I was totally willing now to do whatever it took. I had those reservations before, but they were the things that were going to cost me this abstinence gift that I had been given. And so that was my and so that was me coming the beginning of my spiritual awakening. And it was all of these tapes. My sponsor once, so I now had a sponsor, and she tells me, she says, "You got to start writing 10 steps," because I was the president of a company business that a family business that my dad had started, and he had recently retired, and I had all this stuff going on that I had unions, and I had wildcat strikes. I had all kinds of stuff going on. So I'm writing fears and resentment inventories like crazy. She has me writing 10 steps before I'm even writing my fourth step. And so I'm just trying to keep my head above water with all this stuff going on. And she said, she said, Chuck C., Chuck Chamberlain, who's a legend in AA, and he had done a retreat down at Palo Mesa sometime in probably the 70s, but I'm not really sure about that. But it had been recorded, and the transcription was put into book form, A New Pair of Glasses. And so a lot of times you can get that off of the internet, New Pair of Glasses, and in that. But the recordings, my sponsor gave me a whole set of recordings that were made of that retreat, and it was probably about six or eight cassette tapes, and it's Chuck C. And the reason she gave it to me is because that he was a businessman. and that was and I had she said that I had to learn how to practice the steps in business as well as in my private life and my program life. And so and listening to Chuck C, and and this guy had been dead years before I even came into program. And but it's almost like these people that I got exposed to on tapes, on these cassette tapes, were almost like they were alive and they were speaking to me. And so I'd have to say at that point in time that I was having had this spiritual experience. It's now turning into this spiritual awakening, and I'm basically on fire at that time, and I'm just everything that I can get hold of that's program. And so what's really interesting is that a group from my Monday night meeting are going to go over, and they're going to listen to a speaker. I can't remember his name right now, but he was pretty famous at the time. And so he was going to, and he was going to talk about the 12 steps and relationships. And so I go over with this group, and I never been so bored in my life, because that he's talking about relationships. I want to hear about food and how do you recover from food and how do you work the steps on food, and that's all I knew about that. That's where my recovery was. And then a year later, I couldn't get enough of the relationship stuff. But it was that spiritual awakening happens for everybody at a different pace. There is no there is no set time or method. And so it was just like one of those gifts that kept unfold keeps unfolding. And you know, I have come to the realization over time that that God's will is kind of like a flower. If you've ever seen a time exposure of a flower unfolding, and from the bud, and you just watch it open right in front of you. Well, I feel that God's will is like that for me, is that His will is unfolding, and what I need to do is I need to be patient enough to let His will come into my conscious awareness. And that's kind of more like step 11 stuff, but it's all the same. It's part of that spiritual awakening, and that learning how to do that becomes very, very important. I reading the big book, without a doubt. The big book is inspired writing, without a doubt. I have no doubts whatsoever, and I know that I can trust whatever I read in that book, and I know it's true from not only my own experience, but from the experience of other people that I've seen recover with my own eyes, but also from the experience of those first 100 guys, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob and those other 90 some odd guys that were the original body of people that were the group conscience for that publication of that book. And so I'm totally, totally grateful. I've learned more from the big book than I have any other book in my life, without a doubt. And I can say that, and without any reservation whatsoever. And you know, and I and it's so much a part of my recovery. And I remember just the power of the book. I remember one time going down to the beach, and as this was after my first wife had left me, and so I was really in an interesting place, because I was not dating, I was not doing anything like that, but I was sponsoring a whole bunch of guys, and so they were keeping me pretty busy. And so this one weekend, I went down to the beach, and I didn't go way down to the sand by the water, but I was up not too far from the parking lot. But I was sitting in a chair, and I was reading my big book, and there's a couple walking in the surf way down there, and they come all the way up to me, And they asked me, "Are you a friend of Bill W's?" They recognized the big book from, I was telling you, maybe 50, 60 yards away. And they came all the way up. And I found that that was the way that it was. I didn't have to be an alcoholic to be one of them, that all I had to do was be a friend of Bill Wilson's and read that book and believe in that book. And I was able to go and do things that, turned out to be blessings. Joe and Charlie, very important people in my recovery. Cassette tapes at first, but also in person. They used to come. Okay, thank you, Georgia. They used to come to Pasadena once a year, and I would go up with a group of guys and guys and gals actually. As we would, we probably had about 6 or 7 or 8 people from OA that would go up there and listen to them, and they would pack that auditorium at PCC and to just listen to them talking about the big book, and then later on, running across people in OA who were just as conversant with the big book, but also as compulsive overeaters, not just alcoholics. In fact, is some of these guys are not alcoholics, just like I'm not alcoholics, but they have that same level of trust in the big book. So all of those things are all part of that that spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. The things that I learned in working the steps as far as 6 and 7 with my character defects. I've already talked to you guys about that. But that was crucially important to me to be able to continue on and to learn the things that I needed to learn to keep moving on with God's will, and to be patient enough that when I would come to a place of where I think, oh, here's the crazy thing. Never share this, but it just came to mind. So I was smoking when I came into the program, and I couldn't. Getting rid of the food turned out to be a lot easier than getting rid of the cigarettes. And so I was sponsoring two guys, Cal and Richard the Third, these two guys were so much against my smoking. They were on my case constantly. And so they used to give me tapes by Bobby Earle, because Bobby Earle at the time was standing up at AA meetings and telling, and you couldn't even see the back of the room for the cigarette smoke. And he's telling these guys, "You're killing yourself. You got to stop doing that." And of course, didn't make him popular with a lot of the guys that were there. But they kept giving me Bobby Earle tapes. And so, but Bobby Earle not only talked about smoking, but he talked about how you do for God's will. And one of the things that I learned from Bobby Earle was on tapes, again, cassette tapes, that you go until you hit a wall and then you turn right. And that's what you do. And so you never stop doing God's will. You just go till you hit a wall. And so when I had my stroke, I thought that was the wall that God wanted me to stop being a therapist and to close my practice and everything. And I because I couldn't afford to keep my office open with the limited hours I was able to work. And so I gave notice for closing down my office, and I went to meet with a lady I had interned with, who was very great networker, and she knew a lot of people. And I was going to tell her what the cases that I needed to turn over and find somebody else to take, and see if she could to link me in with somebody that I could turn over to these people so that they could continue on with their progress. And when I started telling her, she said, "Oh," she said, you don't have to do that." She said, "My husband and I are remodeling a house to be a set of offices, and I will rent you an office for $15 an hour, And so I only had to pay for the time I used it. I only had to pay $15 for each session that I used it for. And so that wall that I thought was a wall, I was turning right and I was ready to hang up my practice, didn't turn out to be a wall at all. I just had to turn right and then that's a story that has its continues on, but it's just time after time after time, all of these things come together in such a way, and this is I think the best way to encapsulate it is that when I my mentor Peter Smith at the beginning told me, I told him about all these things that were happening that are just falling into place for me, and I'm telling him about this stuff, and he's telling me that that's a result of the third step. And he had told me this. He said, when you work the third step and you turn your will and your life over, you better hang on to your shorts because you're in for a hell of a ride. And that turned out to be the truth. And so that third step is just so crucially important. And I think I'm going to wrap it up. I know I'm just about out of time. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to share my program in depth as I've been able to in this series. Thank you, everybody.